We're back. Welcome back to Tariq Radio. We had a little technical glitch for about 30 seconds. But we're back. We had a little technical glitch. Things happen. But I'm coming back to you, my baby. Like I said, man, we're going to have me and Mink Slide and APX live in Atlanta next week. We're going to be doing this number here, Satisfying. Next week, not this Saturday, but the Saturday after this, we're going to be live in Atlanta at Center Stage Theater. Y'all need to go to MinkSlide.com and get your tickets. MinkSlide.com to get your tickets, ladies and gentlemen. So we're doing an early show this week because I have a lot of preparation to do for going out of town, going on the road with the Mink Slide Band. So we're doing this show early this week so I can get it out the way. I didn't get a chance to do ISM Radio earlier because I didn't have my laptop that we use for ISM Radio. Because one of my damn kids broke it. They broke the laptop again. You know, my destructive ass kids. But I'm here tonight and we're going to make it do what it do. What we're going to do, we're going to take that quick commercial break. We're going to have a heavy show tonight, man. We're going to have a heavy, heavy show tonight. I really want y'all to pay attention. I got a guest that's coming on that's going to talk about the whole adoption game. Real heavy stuff. So y'all don't move a muscle. We'll be right back right here on Tariq Radio. Ladies and gentlemen.
Yo, you still ain't getting women? Really? Come on, son. You need to go to badboymembership.com and step up your game. What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Mr. Locario, the bad boy of the dating game, and I'm telling you that if you really want to attract beautiful women, you need to go to badboymembership.com. This is where you get 45 through 90 minute step-by-step dating advice tutorials every month. Just sign up, follow the advice, and you'll get the woman you want. Go to badboymembership.com. That's badboymembership.com.
What's up, family? If you make music and you're serious about your craft, then you need to go online and visit my friends over at LegendaryMix.com. They have the experience you need to get the job done right. With almost 20 years behind the boards, their expertise is unmatched. LegendaryMix.com delivers professional audio mixing and mastering for a great price and a fast turnaround time. As a bonus, sign up to the email list at LegendaryMix.com and receive a discount link and free music marketing ebook. So don't hesitate. Get started right now. Visit LegendaryMix.com or send a text to 347-565-5892 or shoot them an email at music@LegendaryMix.com. Yo, are you a fan of personal development and self-help? Loving hip-hop? You love to listen to podcasts? Well, check out my man Poe at PoePolitikin.com. This was founded in 2008. PoePolitikin is a self-help meets hip-hop brand. And with each interview, they teach the babies and they share success secrets with you, the listener. Past guests of the show include Yo Gotti, Currency, MC Light, Dead Prez, Rashida, Gorgeous Dre, and so many more special people out there in the game. So PoePolitikin has featured over 500 guests. Subscribe to his podcast on iTunes and listen to their most recent interview with Rap-A-Lot founder Jay Prince and rapper Big Pooh from Lil Brother. So check them out right now. Go to their website, PoePolitikin.com, and follow them on social media at PoePolitikin. Yo, cupcake season is right around the corner, family, and you need to get your fragrance game all up in order. So you need to check out ashkicking.com. That's a black-owned business that sells all natural health and beauty products, and it also has fragrance products. You can get beauty products such as body butter, hair moisturizer, face moisturizer, unique incense burners, incense sticks, scented candles, and so much more. So again, you need to check out ashkicking, that's K-I-C-K-I-N, .com.
The year is 2079. The futuristic nation of New Albion has been created to maintain a new racial apartheid system. There is a planned genocide that is going to target the nation's black population. A small group of black revolutionaries band together to launch guerrilla warfare attacks against their oppressors. Do they fail? Or do they succeed? Find out the answer by reading the book, Avoid the Machines, the new novel by author Scotty Vasco. Avoid the Machines, now available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com.
Get ready, Atlanta and surrounding areas. Get ready, Atlanta and surrounding areas. King Flex Entertainment proudly presents Mid Slide Live in Concert. Coming to the Center Stage Theater in Atlanta, Saturday, December 22nd, 2018, 7:30 p.m. Is bringing the funk party to Atlanta, performing songs from their critically acclaimed album, Egyptian Musk. Also performing, special guest, the APX. Atlanta, don't miss the funk party, concert event of the year. Get your tickets to see Mink Slide live in concert with special guest the APX at Ticketmaster.com. For more information, go to MinkSlide.com.
You are now tuning in to the King of Game, Tariq Elite on Tariq Elite Radio.
I am delivered! Yo, we're here. We're back. Welcome back to Tariq Radio. Glad to have y'all tuning back in, ladies and gentlemen. Ready to do our thing. We're doing an early show, early this week. It's Tuesday. We normally do the show on Wednesday, sometimes Thursday. Sometimes I do it as late as Friday, but we're doing it early this week. I didn't get a chance to do Ism Radio today, but I'm here. We're going to make it do what it do. Another thing, those North Sentinel Island University shirts, those things have been selling like hotcakes. We're actually basically sold out. We only have small and medium left, but we will have more this week. The things completely sold out in a week. Those shirts are very popular, and they're so popular, we're going to have different colors for you this week. So you can go to HiddenColorsFilm.com. All my small and medium people, you can get your shirt now, but if you're a little huskier, you're bigger, you're taller, wait a couple of days, and we're going to have the new North Sentinel Island shirts available for you, ladies and gentlemen. And again, go to HiddenColorsFilm.com. There you can also get the Malema shirts. You can also get Hidden Colors 1, 2, 3, and 4, and the movie 1804, The Hidden History of Haiti. That'll be a nice stocking stuffer for Christmas in Kwanzaa, ladies and gentlemen. And don't forget, you know, we're going to be in Atlanta next week, the Mink Slide concert. We're going to do a historical show there. This is going to be a hot one. I want to see everybody in Atlanta and surrounding areas in the place. Get your tickets at minkslide.com. We're going to have a great time with the family. So today's show is going to be a heavy show. Let me get my sister on the phone because I'm talking to a person today. Let me get her on the phone. Let me make sure I get her on the phone because her phone has been acting a little jank. Let me make sure she's on here.
Hello?
Hey, Fee, it's Tariq.
Hey, Tariq, what's up?
You good? Everything good with you?
Yes, sir. Everything good with you?
Yes, it is. So let me set this up. So I have my girl Fee on the phone. And what I want to talk to you guys about, and I want to have her talk about, you know, I talk a lot about the suspected white supremacists who go over to Africa and the Caribbean and they adopt black children. And you know, I've been talking about that for years. You know, I'm an advocate for children that have been basically kidnapped and quote unquote adopted by these suspected races. Nobody speaks up for the children. Nobody speaks up for these people. And I'm a staunch advocate of that because we underestimate the terror that these children go through. And, you know, I've said many times, especially after Devontae Hart, after his family, that little boy and his siblings got killed by those demonic white supremacist women up there in Oregon. You know, when people reach out to me and they're in a situation like that and they need any kind of help, I'm going to always be there for that. But I want you guys to hear straight from the horse's mouth. I have a sister. We were chopping it up. She reached out to me. She was actually adopted by a white family. She's from Africa. She's from Sierra Leone. And she was adopted by a white family. And I want you to... Nobody ever talks to the children or the adults who was raised in a family like that. You notice that? Nobody ever really gets to sit down and talk to them and see what really goes on in that. And my sister here has a very interesting story. Now, Fee, now, how old are you right now, sister?
Right now, I'm emotionally and physically drained. I will admit I'm very, very drained. But overall, my spirit is good. My energy is well. You know, I woke up today, so I'm doing something right.
Yes, indeed. Now, I ask, how old are you now? How old are you now? Because you're an adult now.
Oh, I'm 23. I just turned 23, yes. My birthday was November 10th. I just turned 23. I'm a Scorpio, so you know. Yeah.
There you go. So you're 23 now. Now we talked earlier, but we're going to start over. So you were adopted. You were born in Sierra Leone, right?
Yes, I was. I was born in Sierra Leone. I was adopted right after the Blood Diamond War at the age of 5.
And what year we're talking? It's 2000, right?
Yeah, I came over to America in 2001.
Okay. And you were 5 years old, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Now, a lot of folks don't know, and we were talking about this earlier, that a lot of the families there, they're tricked into allowing their children to be adopted. What happened with your family?
Yeah, so during the war, it's just, you know, a lot of misplacement, a lot of confusion, just children are affected. So a lot of parents are put in positions where they have to make really big life-changing decisions. So basically, my mother was offered this life-changing decision. But unfortunately, due to her lack of education, she did not realize what she was really getting herself into. So, you know, basically, these people came to her all dressed up, you know, from a foreign land, speaking well, just selling her a dream, like, oh, you know, give us your daughter and we're going to send her to America where she's going to have a better life. She's going to go to the best schools. You know, we're going to take care of her as if she's our own daughter, you know. So my mother, not having many options, she took that option really because she did not want me to grow up in Sierra Leone and poverty. She wanted something better for me. So she risked everything for me to come to America. But in that agreement, they told my mom that every year I was going to go home. That's what they told her. And the contract that she supposedly signed, you know, they said, we're going to keep in touch. She's going to come home. Like, we'll make sure we send picture updates every year so that you can see how she's growing. You know, they really sold her this dream. But unfortunately, as soon as I left her, there was no contact. There was nothing. It was like that world was just cut off completely.
Wow. And, you know, for reference, guys, that's the same thing they did with the Atlantic slave trade. A lot of the African leaders there, many of them were told that some of the captives would be brought back. They thought that they were going to be indentured for a certain amount of time and that they would be brought back. When some of the Africans realized they weren't being brought back, that's when they started to fight the colonizers. So this is a game that's been going on for a long time.
Exactly. Like, I really thought that I was going to come back. Like, I really thought. I was under the impression that I was going to come visit for a little bit, you know, go to school here for a little bit and then get to decide if I wanted to live in America or live in Sierra Leone. Like, I was really convinced that that was the plan. And then I came to America and it's like a year goes by and they don't even speak about Sierra Leone anymore, my mother anymore, nothing. And then 5 years go by. I don't want to speak about Sierra Leone anymore, or my mother or anything, because I don't really know how to speak about it. And then 10 years go by, and then next, you know, I'm here 18 years later.
Wow.
Nothing.
Now let's back up. When they were taking you, your mother was telling the people at the adoption agency there that she changed her mind. She actually didn't want you to go.
Yeah. At one point, my mother did change her mind. This was right before the adoption was finalized. Me and her went to the hotel that the two men who were, like, basically trying to finalize the adoption for me to go to America, we went to the hotel, and we went all the way up to the balcony, And she was crying, you know, she was holding me. She's like, oh, I changed my mind. Like, I don't want my daughter to go anymore, you know. And one of the men got really angry. He's like, no, like, you can't do that. You signed a contract. You can't do that. You know, like, really just, he got so aggressive. And, you know, I just remember my mom holding on to me really tight and just begging them. And she's like, I will give you back the money. I will give you back the gifts. Like, I will give you back everything you gave me. But please do not take my daughter, you know. And the one man was like getting really angry. And then the other man, you know, good cop, bad cop, he's like, wait, 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 calm down. You know, you're scaring the little girl. Let's have her decide. And then they pulled out a Barbie doll. And they were like, you can stay with your mom where you don't get Barbies, where you don't get new clothes, you know, really selling that dream, or you can come with us and you'll get new toys and you'll get all this stuff. And me being a little girl who's never seen a Barbie doll before, and it's all pretty and clean and, like, you know, I'm just like, wow, she has hair that I can braid. Like, I want this doll. So I really went to them wanting the doll, and they pulled me in. They're like, see, she wants to be with us. Like, so you're going to leave. Like, we're going to take her now.
And for reference again, same thing they did in slavery. They used trinkets. They went over there to West Africa and had different trinkets and lured people, some of them on the boat with those trinkets. Same thing. So, wow. So now you get over here. You're 5 years old. You get adopted. There's a white family who adopted you. Now, what was that like when you got here?
I didn't like it. I remember going to the airport. I remember when I came into the Atlanta airport, my adopted mother, like, had her arms wide open. And she's like, I'm your new mom now. And I was just like, huh? You're not my mom. Like, look at you.
Wow.
Like, you are not my mom. But at first it was cool, you know, because, again, all I saw up until that point was just warshed and destruction. So I come to Atlanta, and it's just, wow, you know, wow. Like, what's a skyscraper? Like, big metal birds, new shoes, new clothes, new toys. Like, at first, when I first came, it was a dream. It was all a dream to reach. Like, they had, the room was all set up and prepared for us. The drawers, the closet, all new clothes, all new shoes, toys that had never been opened before. And every day, people were coming with just gifts, like big doll houses, the Barbie dream car, like everything a little girl would want, like everything. Like, there was just gifts and gifts and gifts. And Christmas happened, I got all these gifts. Hanukkah happened, because my adopted father is Jewish and my adopted mother is Christian. So we celebrated both holidays.
Okay.
So it was just gifts. I was like, wow, like all these gifts, okay? And then, and my adopted mother, like, they would play with us. They were fun. They were loving, you know, like, they really, 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 like, just made it seem like paradise. Like, everything was paradise.
Right.
And then one day, I can't remember when, but one day it just stopped. Like, it just stopped. My adopted mother, like, she didn't want to play with us anymore. Like, she didn't want to do anything with us anymore. And my adoptive father, he was always working. He was never home. And it just, the house that we were adopted into was this big, scary house with just so many rooms. And it just became, it became really lonely. Like, my life became very lonely. And
yeah, the novelty wore off. Yeah, it's like, yeah, the
it
novelty
wore off.
Yeah, the
yeah.
novelty wore off.
And
now this family, they had some other children. They had other,
yes, they did.
They had other siblings. And one of the siblings, he was a little older. He was around 13, and he started to sexually assault you.
Yes, he did.
Now, what happened with that? How old were you when that happened?
I was five. That happened, like, honestly, a few months into the adoption. That happened, and it first started off like he would just play with me by myself, you know, like, you know, like I just thought, oh, you know, what a good big brother. Like, he would do the quote unquote big brother activities, and then one day we were down in the basement and I was playing by myself. You know, I was playing with my Bratz doll. And y'all know the Bratz doll, the feet come off.
Yeah.
So I was just playing with my Bratz dolls, and he took one of the feet and he put it in his pants and he's like, get it out, you know? And I'm just like, okay, like, I want my Bratz doll feet back. Like, I'm playing, like, I'll, you know. And it started off like that. It started off with him putting things in his pants and he'd be like, get it out. And then it turned into, you know, like, touch it. I'd be like, touch what? You know, and he'd be like, touch my penis, you know. And then it turned into that. And then it would turn into like him being like, oh, come into my room. And honestly, there's times when I would go into his room and it's just black. Like, the memory in my head is just black. Like,
wow.
I don't really remember what happened. But, and then it escalated to him like touching me and like forcing objects inside of me. And it got to the point where like I would have blood in my underwear and like, I didn't know what to do anymore, because my adoptive mother was always in her room sleeping or like out, and my adoptive father was always working, and I didn't know who to tell, so I wouldn't tell anybody, you know.
Right.
And yeah.
Did you go to school at the time? Were you in school?
Yeah, I was in school. And it's actually funny because first grade.
I can't hear you, sweetie. I can't hear you.
I'm sorry.
There you go.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
I'm
go ahead.
Sorry. First grade. So the abuse, it wasn't just sexual abuse. Of course not. You would, you know,
you're muffled. Like, let me get you clear.
Can you hear me?
I can
hear
you.
Sorry, the connection is.
Okay.
Okay. So after he would like sexually abuse me, he'd be like, "You're so stupid. You're fat. You're ugly." Like, you know, then it would turn into verbal abuse. And so I really started believing those things. Like,
wow.
Oh, I'm ugly. I'm fat. Like, I'm disgusting. Like, what is wrong with me? I smell funny. I smell bad. And I wrote a letter to myself in first grade saying I was stupid. I was ugly. I was all of this stuff. And my teacher saw it. And she made me go to a counselor. And she was a black counselor. And her name was Miss Ashley. And Miss Ashley was trying so hard to get me to basically admit to what was going on. But, like, I couldn't do it.
Wow.
I couldn't do it because I was, like I said, like I told you, I was adopted with my brother and my little sister who came a year later. And I felt like I had to protect them. Like, I took on the motherly role, like, because my adopted mother was not a mom. So I took on the motherly role. And I thought to myself, if I tell this lady what's happened to me and they take me out of the house, he might touch my sister or my brother, and I can't have him do that to them. So I can't tell.
Right.
Because I don't want him to hurt them, you know? So I didn't say anything. But yeah.
Now, you had a, because you sent me some pictures. Now, you had a, was it your sister or your cousin who had a baby by the white dude? Is it one of you? Who was that?
My sister, she's originally my first cousin.
Oh.
Her mom and my mom were sisters. Yes, yes.
Okay, got it.
So her mom passed away giving birth to her. So she's my cousin. She's my blood. So she went through a whole nother psychological damage because they adopted her a year later. So by the time she came, my brother David and I already started school. You know, we were already Americanized. When my sister came, I realized I made a big mistake on asking her to come to this country. Like, I was like, oh my God, I shouldn't have. So she was always with my adopted mother alone, and I don't really know what happened to her, but basically she is completely just lost in the sauce. Is she really sees herself as a white woman, honestly. She really wants to live the white country club life, marry a white man, have mixed children. So she ended up going to school to Alabama and I guess was messing with this white frat boy. And I try to tell her, like, these white boys, they do not care about us. They just want us sexually. Like, you have to be careful, you know, like, it's one thing to mess with them, but to really think that you could be in a relationship with one of them,
yeah.
It doesn't happen like that. So he got her knocked up. She tried to reach out to him. He said, hang on, we'll figure it out later. She tried reaching out. And he basically told her, I do not want a black son. Mm. He blocked her. He didn't tell his family. We tried contacting his family. We tried, Tariq, on many occasions. We tried sending Facebook messages. We tried sending emails. We even had to do the whole child support letter to him. And they had been very uncooperative. And they basically want nothing to do with my
sister. She need to still put his ass on child support anyway.
That's what we're trying to do. He's definitely going to have to be on child support because she's starting to realize that taking care of my nephew it's expensive and it's not fair for her to do it on her own because she did not make him on her own.
Yeah, get all his little meth and mayonnaise money. Get all of it, you know? Get every dime of it while she bullshitting around. But so
and also
go ahead.
I just wanted to say she's currently dating this white boy that we grew up with who's like a quote unquote, you know, a childhood friend. Not really a childhood friend, just somebody we grew up with. And again, I gave her the same talk. I said, Sata, this boy is not going to value you. He's not going to value Grayson. He will keep you a secret. I told her everything. Everything that you have ever said about black women dating outside the race or any melanated person dating outside the race, everything that you have said, I tried telling her, you know. Mm-hmm. She didn't want to listen. November 9th, the day before my birthday, she tells me, oh, I think I want to break up with Jack. I said, why? She said, I'm going to call you back. She calls me back and says, Jack wants to talk to you. So I said, okay, give him the phone. And Jack admitted to me again while my sister is in the same room as they're in the room together. He said, you were right. I am ashamed of your sister for being black. I hid her from my parents. I'm ashamed that she had a baby out of wedlock. I was living a double life. Everything I told her, he admitted. Okay. I called her a few days later to check up on her, you know, because again, I'm not living at the house. I'm not living with them. So I call her to see how she's doing. And she said that they are still together and they're going to make it work.
Lord. Lord, Lord, yep. Lord. Wow. Wow. Yep. Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, when you got, when you're around 16, how was your mm-hmm. adopted mom coming at you? How was her vibe then?
She's okay. My adopted mother has never liked me. I've never felt comfortable around. I've always been closer to my adopted father. My adopted father and I, growing up, we were very just like the best of friends, me and him. We had our disagreements, but we were still the best of friends. And she never liked that. And it got to the point where when they were going through their marital issues, she started reflecting that on me. And I never understood because I wanted to see my adopted father as my dad, as my real father, as if I came from this man. So I never understood where her animosity was coming from. One day she comes in my room after they got into this huge fight and he just leaves. She comes in my room. She's hysterical, crying, and she's just like, this is all your fault. I know what you're doing. You're trying to take him away from me. And I'm like, well, who am I trying to steal from you? She's like, you want him. I see how you look at him. And I'm just sitting here baffled because, again, this is my father. You know, I'm trying to see this man as my whole father, Tariq. I would never, ever want my own father in any kind of way other than a daughter wants her father. But here is my adoptive mother accusing me of trying to steal my adoptive father away from her.
Oh, yeah.
Basically saying that. Basically thinking that I'm going to go run away with him and me and him are going to go be together or something.
It's like 12 Years a Slave, same thing in that movie. Like, just like 12 years a damn slave. Same thing. It's like a slave house. It's interesting about your adopted father's occupation. What is his occupation? Where does he work?
My adopted father, he is an infectious disease doctor. He specializes in AIDS, and he works for the CDC.
Wow. Now, that's heavy. That is very heavy. That is heavy. And
and
what's interesting is that he would try to promote transsexuality and LGBT lifestyles to you guys, right?
Yes, because a lot of his clients, as you can figure, were a lot of gay men. So we would go to his little fundraisers. One year for the AIDS walk, one of his clients is actually really good friends with Elton John. So Elton John came out. So I grew up really normalizing it, you know. I remember one day I made a gay joke and my adopted mother lost it. She goes, "You don't say stuff like that." Whoop, whoop, whoop. Like, she went in, you know. So I really normalized being gay. Like, at one point I was really convinced that, oh, being gay isn't a choice. You're born gay. Like, you're born wanting to be a different gender. Like, they really promoted that, you know. They really promoted that in our household. Like, we don't see color. My siblings would say to me, or like, you know, like, just they would always promote that kind of stuff. Like, they really, really pushed just that being gay was okay, and it was okay to be transgender, and it was okay to question your sexuality and want to mess with, you know, the same sex and all that kind of stuff.
Now, your brother was there too, right? Your
yeah.
Okay. Did they mess with him? What was going on with him?
My brother, my adoptive Caucasian brother was very jealous of my brother, because my brother is very, very talented in soccer and really any sport. They put us in a lot of sports.
Okay.
But when I mean, Tariq, any sport that my brother David touched, he was phenomenal at. So, you know, my adopted parents really took pride in the fact that he was the youngest. He would be on a soccer team where some of the kids were like 5 years older than him. Like, that's how amazing he was, you know? So my Caucasian adopted brother would like always try to beat my brother up and like really try to hurt him and like do a lot. Like, it wasn't play fighting. It wasn't play fighting. Like, he would really hurt my brother. And I cannot speak on if my brother or David or my sister Sata were ever sexually abused, but I know for a fact that they went through their own fair share of abuse.
Right.
You know, they went through their own fair share. Whatever that may have been, they don't want to speak about it. They really do not want to speak about it. My brother, the pain that he went through, he blacked out a lot of our childhood. A lot of our childhood. He doesn't speak about any of it. Like, he says that he thinks it's a good thing that he forgot a lot of what he went through. And now, my sister too.
How old is he now? How's your brother now?
He's going to be 24 this year.
Okay. Is he in a relationship with women, men? What is he doing?
He is in a relationship with white girls. Currently,
uh-oh,
he's dating this white girl.
Uh-oh, they got him. They got him.
That he believes is nothing like my adoptive mother. He believes that she is different. He even fed me that everybody was a slave once. We're all oppressed in America.
He said that.
He tried to feed me that storyline.
Oh, they got him. And ladies and gentlemen, these are the people who work at The Root in Ebony. These are the people. This is what happens. This is what happens. They got him, unfortunately. They didn't get this sister on the phone. They didn't get her. Her mind was strong. And, you know, oh, my God, this is so heavy. This is so heavy.
They got him really, really bad. He feels like he does feel bad about the abuse that I went through. Like, he really does. He believes that my adopted brother should be in prison. Like, he really does. But at the same time, he feels like I should still pretend to have a relationship with my adopted family so I can, like, have them, like, you know, support me through school. But I realized that I would rather struggle on my own than receive little rewards and then at the cost go through more abuse.
Right, right.
Like, I can't do that anymore. Like, the money isn't worth it. Anything that they have to offer me materialistically is not worth my sanity. I fought very, very, very hard to keep my sanity. Very hard.
Mm.
Very hard.
Yeah.
To keep my sanity. And I will not jeopardize my peace of mind, my happiness, for fake love and fake validation, because that is all I ever received.
Now you,
I'm okay now.
You recently tried to, you were going to take your adopted father, white dad, to court. Now, what happened with that?
So I did take him to court. I actually did. November 19th, I took him to court because he, like the video you talked about, he tried to mark his territory. So, you know, right before my 23rd birthday, he realized that, oh, I feel like my interpretation was, oh, I do not have to pretend anymore that she's my daughter. She's becoming grown. She's, her age is matching her body. Like, she's looking really good. So he basically, you know, he made a very obvious sexual pass at me, and I wasn't having it anymore. I went through it with his son. I almost committed suicide from it. I went through various treatment for it. You know, I lost a lot of myself for what his son did to me, and I was not going to go through it again. I was not going to live through it again. So I took him to court, but I did end up dropping the case because, not because, oh, I feel bad for him. No, because I'm trying to go home to visit my family. So I did not want to be held up with going through court with him and all that stuff, because I'm over it. I'm over communicating with them. I'm over all of it.
Wow. Well, so you really just kind of got away from them, right?
Yes. Like, I've tried. At the age of 16, I ran away to Savannah, Georgia. I ran away again at the age of when I was 20, turning 21, to Dallas, Texas. But this time, the third time, this is good. I finally got away. I mean, it's been hard, Tariq. It's been definitely hard because, again, our relationship was very codependent. Like, my brother, sister, and I, and even their biological children, are very, very dependent on my father's income and, you know, and just all that stuff. So he made us very dependent on him.
Right.
So I'm not going to lie. It's very hard because I'm learning everything. I'm learning how to just survive out here and how to take care of myself and just how to do everything because, yeah. So I'm learning.
So you want to go back home. Are you trying to go back to live, or you just want to visit just to see your family and then come back? What are you trying to do?
Well, realistically, if I had the funds, I would go back to live and you would never see me again if I had the funds. But unfortunately, I do not have the funds, nor do I have the degrees. And I feel like I owe it to my family, and especially to my mom, to finish school, to really make a name for myself out here in America before I come back and live. So this would just be a long overdue visit. 18 years, Tariq. It has been 18 years. And yes, I have counted every day, every minute, every hour, every second that has gone by. So I just want to see my mom. I just want her to know that I'm alive. You know, I want her to know that I have made it, like, I'm still going to take care of the family. I'm still going to take care of her. So this is just a visit. This is a visit for me to see my country, to see the condition that she is in, and really what I need to do and the state to really ensure that when I do go back to live, that I'm coming back with something for my people. Like, I'm coming back with jobs. I'm coming back with opportunities. I'm not just going to come back to come back. I got to help my country.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you might be leaving in a couple of days, right?
Yeah, Lord, that is the dream.
Yes.
That is the dream, to be able to leave in a couple of days. But unfortunately, I swear, Tariq, the devil is working overtime, and he has not slept trying to keep me away from getting on that plane. It has been rough. We have, I am currently with my friend Elsie, who I told you about, who's from Sierra Leone as well, who has basically been my rock through this difficult transition of my life. If it wasn't for her and her family, I would still be sleeping in my car, honestly.
Oh,
let's
wow.
let's just say that. Wow. Yeah, like that's how desperate I was to get out of that house. We have spent a lot. Her family, her mom, what they do have, they have spent a lot to help me put this trip together. The other night, for example, let me tell you how rough it's been. The other night at 4 a.m. in the morning, Tariq, cops come to tow Elsie's car because of a $30 ticket. And of course, they're black cops. And of course, they don't even want us to pay for the ticket right there. Instead, they write her another ticket. They tow her car, you know, and, you know, every day the car is taken. It's like $100 a day. So that almost kept me away from getting my ticket because we had to take care of that. I got stung by two bees, found out I'm highly allergic.
So now your homegirl, is she going over there with you too?
Yes, but unfortunately, since we did not know that we needed a visa to get into Guinea, our travel has been messed up. She's going to leave hopefully on the 14th if we can get the tickets together, and I would have to leave on the 25th. So we're just trying to We're scraping to make this happen. Like, we are going back to Sierra. It's happening.
No doubt. You guys going to get it again. I sent you some earlier.
You helped me. It's happening.
Yes, indeed. So you're going to do it. Yeah, you're definitely going to get it in. But anyway, sister, you need to get a book. You need to write a book about this shit. This is so interesting. This is a hell of an interesting story.
Thank you.
Anyway, thank you so much for calling in. Let me know, you know, personally, you know, you got my number. Let me know how everything transpires and let me know how everything, you know, transpires.
Yeah,
as well.
I would definitely love to do either like a personal video chat. Really, when I'm in Sierra Leone, I would love to do like a Skype just to have everyone like, you know, meet my family, like just, you know, see that I made it. I would love to be able to do that, like see that I made it. Just show everybody Sierra Leone, the real Sierra Leone, not the fake CNN news Sierra Leone. Like, my country, she's been through it, but she is still so beautiful.
Absolutely.
And I want people to see how beautiful she still is.
Yes,
so
indeed.
I would love to be able to set something up with you if you have time. I know you're a busy man, so.
We'll make it pop off. We'll make it pop. So you hit me up when you get over there. We'll make it happen. All right.
I appreciate you. I appreciate you so much for talking to me, and I appreciate everybody who listened to my story. I want to start speaking because I know that there are children who have been adopted as well and who are still waiting to be adopted, who have been through what I have been through or who have gone through worse. There are children who have gone through way worse, Tariq, as you can imagine, way worse.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and we have to start speaking on this because this is not okay.
Absolutely.
This is not okay.
Absolutely.
They are not. This is not okay.
Real
this is
talk.
Not okay.
All right. Thank you so much, beloved. Thank you so much. Okay. That is our sister. That's Fifi. Let me put my music back on. Man, I just had to share the sister's story. I had to share that. Man, now this is the real deal. Some people said, is this real? Yeah, it's the real deal. I mean, I've been chopping it up with her. I've seen pictures of the family. I done researched, and, you know, this shit is real. I see pictures of her and the adopted family and all these other relatives. I've seen all of it. You dig? Somebody said she's spitting some real talk. You know, I done sent her something. I've already sent her something to get straight. I've already sent something to her. I already sent some paper, and I'm going to send more. I'm going to send more to make sure she's good. Now, some people are saying, where can they send? Y'all go to melanoidnation.org if y'all want to help out. But I've sent some stuff already. I've already said, anybody in a situation like that, I got you. Hit me up. I got you. And she had receipts. She had receipts, and she was showing me all the shit that was happening. She's 23, 24 now. But this is what happens. This is really the first time you get to hear somebody and from one of those families be honest and tell what happened. Do you understand? This happens all the time. I want y'all to understand this. That happens all the time. Most people are just not honest about it. Just like when she was a kid and she went to a counselor, she was scared to say something. Why? Because they're financially dependent on these damn molester, demonic ass adopted family members. What are they going to do? Remember when the little boy and the Devontae Hart up there in Oregon, him and his sisters, what were they going to do? They're running around banging on neighbors' doors, begging for food. What are they going to do? They're running around the neighbors' houses begging for damn food. So this goes on all the time. This goes on all the time. Now you see how they make bedwinches. Like she was talking about her sister, cousin, and all these people, her brother. You see how, and I wanted to have her on because a lot of people think that I'm hard on a lot of the immigrants lately. I've been hard on them, and I have been hard on some of the coon immigrants because some of them come over cooning and some of them are adopted and turned into coons and bedwinches. These are the people that she was talking about. This is how we get motherfuckers working at the root with complete anti-black hatred, black American hatred. These people have gone through the ringer. We got to understand. We got to start asking questions. We assume because we see somebody smiling with white mommy and white daddy, everything is okay. We underestimate how demonic the white supremacists are. And the thing is, black folks who come over here from Africa and the Caribbean, they get into the households with these people. And they become social and science experiments. And a lot of the stuff I wanted y'all to catch, like her adopted dad, he works for the CDC. And I researched it. He does work for the CDC. He's a doctor out there in Lawrenceville, Georgia. He's out there in Georgia now. He works in AIDS research. You see that? You see when they always talking about Africa and AIDS and they're going over there bringing folks back over here and psychologically indoctrinating them. And then all of a sudden, these immigrants, and I talked about this recently, why do you think so many of these African and Caribbean immigrants are over here pushing the LGBT stuff? I was just talking about that. So I'm showing you the science behind it. When you look at the people who are the faces of Black Lives Matter, those, they always prop up those three women. Now, some of them are immigrants. Some of them are like Nigerian and all this old stuff. And that's really an LGBT movement. All of them are lesbians. Some of them are immigrants. One of them, one of the quote, unquote, unquote founders of Black Lives Matter, she's married to a white woman who's a transgendered male. It's all over the place. That's by design. They know how to get black folks, get them inside their houses, and just do work on them for years. Just imagine 18 years of just molestation, psychological abuse, verbal abuse, physical abuse, just all types of abuse, and then you release them on black society. So here you go. Go get a job at The Root and get a job at Ebony. Go have at it, nigga. Do you understand me? But look out for a lot of these folks that are promoted as black spokespersons by the media. This is why I want you to look into the backgrounds of people who the white supremacist media will promote as leaders for black society. A lot of these folks were adopted or raised by white families. And this is what you get. Now you see what goes on in Charlize Theron's house while the little boy is walking around in a dress with braids now. We see the psychological torture that people go through. This is a movie. this is some movie stuff right here that's happening. I might have to just do a whole documentary on that. I might have to do a whole documentary on that. But when you see these folks coming amongst black society, and I'm tying all of that stuff in, the LGBT stuff, because when you got people from the CDC going over to Africa, bringing people back and doing social experiments on them, we need to ask questions when we see certain black leaders who are pushing an LGBT agenda. Who's raising them? Like D. Ray McKesson. Where that nigga parents at? Y'all notice y'all ain't never seen that nigga's parents? Who raised him? We're going to have to start asking questions. When we see these Negroes pop out of nowhere, who's raising these niggas? Who's raising them? I really want to know who raised D. Ray McKesson? Who's raising that nigga? Who are these niggas' parents? When you start looking at who raised some of these folks, when you dig into the background, you'll see their mentality. That's why when I expose... what's her name over there at Ebony? Jamila, when I exposed her dad and his background, his shady ass, a white man passing for black. Now you got to see her mentality and where it came from. Look at who's raising these people. That's what I want to know. When I see somebody cooning, when I see somebody bedwinching, I start looking at the parents. Nigga, where you come from? Who raised your ass? Just like T.K. Kirkland said, nigga, who raised you? What's up, Demetrius? My man Demetrius in the room. He said the show got to her. It's heavy, man. It's heavy. It is heavy. But we got to understand that these folks got an agenda for us. They're playing chess with us. They're not playing checkers. They think 18, 20 years down the line, they understand. That's why when they were rushing to adopt all those children, understand when there's a war going on, and that's what happened with the sister who called up Fifi. You know, they had that war going on in Sierra Leone, and that's what they do. Whenever there's a war, whenever there's a natural disaster, they go over there. The white supremacists rush over there pretending to help. That right there is a red damn flag. They shit on us over here. You think they're going to go over there to a foreign land to actually help somebody out of the kindness of their hearts? Fee is lucky they didn't harvest her damn organs. This is why so many African nations are banning these foreign adoptions. I know Ethiopia's banned it. I think Kenya has banned it. Because all these shits are right now, man, these foreign adoptions, they're pedophile rings and organ harvesting ring. It's damn near guaranteed when those kids get adopted, somebody's going to molest them. So this is why, you know, I like to create an avenue where we can help brothers and sisters like this. And again, I've said before, anybody in a situation like this, you reach out and we'll try to provide as much help as we can before motherfuckers get on the coon train. Now, Fee, when she was talking, her brother, they already got him on the train. Sound like they got her brother on the coon train already. You understand? Boy, they do psychological and biological warfare on us. But just that CDC thing, that's really heavy for me. The fact that somebody over there from the CDC is over there getting kids and bringing them back, no telling what this dude is doing. My God. And I've always said, down in the CDC, we talk about that in the upcoming Hidden Colors 5. We talk about that. And like I said, last time I went down to Atlanta, I said, there's something in the air here. There's some kind of chemical in the air. I remember for the first day I was in Atlanta, I couldn't stop sneezing. I kept having an allergic reaction to the air out there. Y'all remember I kept saying that. I did a few broadcasts out there. And the minute I got off the plane in Atlanta, I just kept having this allergic reaction. That wasn't no pollen. I'm not allergic to no fucking pollen. I got trees all in my backyard, so it wasn't pollen. It was some kind of chemical in the air that I guess after a day or so, your body gets used to it. And the people there, you probably are already used to it. And I'm telling you, there's some shit in the air down there. And the CDC is down there, and they got every disease stored at the CDC. You dig? Somebody said the CDC just announced 70% of the black women in Fulton County, Georgia, are HIV positive. Wow. 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 And I got a lot of love for Atlanta. That's why we're doing our concert. That's why I chose Atlanta for our concert spot. Much love to Atlanta, by the way. But we got to keep our eyes and ears open, family. We need to come up with ways to protect black children. I tell you, anytime I'm out somewhere and I see some alt-lice looking people with black children, you know, I'm looking at the kid like, hey, kid, just give me a sign. Throw me a code word. Let me know if you're safe. We need to make sure these children are okay. We need to let children know, and adults know too, because some of these adults are stuck too. Let them know that, you know, we can get them out of these situations. We can help them as much as we can. Shout out to Arden Plumbing. Shout out to our brother. Shout out to our brother. But again, I've been telling people for years, this is the kind of stuff that happens in these white adoptive families. It's always some fuck shit going on. That's what it is. It might not be all, but I don't give a damn. It's too many. It's too many, so you got to just suspect and be suspicious of a lot of them with all this stuff going on with these children. You can get away with a lot with these children, because who are they going to go to? They don't have no friends, no other relatives here. So you got these babies completely unprotected in these white supremacist enclaves just being tortured nonstop. And that's why they bring them over here. They can have somebody they can torture with complete impunity. That's why they do it. So, you know, I want to let these folks know, man, we'll try our best to look out for you. We'll try our best to help you. We'll try our best to keep our eyes open and make sure that you're good. But the thing is, when you look at some of these shea butters, some of these shea butter feminists, and some of these anti-black American, all lives matter Negroes, now you see how they were raised. Now you see what's popping with them. Anyway, y'all, that's been today's episode of Tariq Radio. Again, go to melanoidnation.org if you would like to help out. I'm helping the sister out already. And we are, you know, we help a lot of folks out in situations like that. You know, it's heavy. I know it's heavy. I know it's heavy hearing all that stuff, because I already know that it goes on. And just that's the first time a lot of people got to hear it right from the horse's mouth. It's one thing to hear it from me talking about it, because I talk to people like her all the time. But to hear somebody who's strong enough to tell their own story, who's brave enough to tell their own story, that's heavy. Because a lot of folks don't have that bravery, because they're still dependent on white mommy and white daddy. And that's the thing. A lot of them are still dependent on these people. So I take my hat off to that sister and to her bravery. Anyway, man, that's been today's show, man. I know it's a heavy show, but, you know, sometimes we got to get heavy like that, man. Go to HiddenColorsFilm.com to get HC 1, 2, 3, and 4. And go to 1804movie.com to get the movie 1804. Also, speaking of Atlanta, all my Atlanta folks, join me and my band and the group, the APX. We will be in Atlanta, Center Stage Theater, Saturday night, 7 p.m., December 22nd. That's going to be not this Saturday, but the Saturday after this. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to see your face in the place. Go to minkslide.com and get your tickets, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm going to holler.